It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
What's up and welcome back to Pound for Pound, your one-stop shop for all things combat sports at WFUV Sports. I am your host, Andrew Canary, and I am alongside Chris Carino and Andy Rodriguez. Guys, UFC 294 is officially in the books. There are some big results. My picks weren't that great, but, you know, we'll talk about them. Andy, I imagine you're not too happy about it as well. But, yeah, we'll get into it. We also got a huge boxing match just a day away, Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury. That is a dream matchup that I've been waiting to see for a while, so I can't wait to talk to you guys about it. But before that, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. We had a really great UFC card. I think you could argue might have been better with the replacements than without. I was still excited for the Dagestani Brazilian war personally. But it's still, we got great fights, definitely interesting matchups, and also kind of creates an interesting kind of ambiance for the rest of the year, kind of, you know, making that final push into UFC 300.
Yeah, I'm doing great too. I think it was a good card in spite of all the late issues that showed up. It was still very entertaining. And now we keep having more issues with people pulling out. I guess it really is spooky season, Halloween weekend. You just get jump scared every time you wake up and you hear some like fighter jump, like is pulling out of the card. So not too exciting in that regard, but a lot to talk about at least.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it seems like fight cancellations is just kind of the thing for this fall. You know, we're going to talk about the John Jones cancellation in just a minute here.
Yeah, Andy, I just want to make one point. I heard it on Twitter. Obviously, the group of people that hate the UFC the most is probably boxing fans, but I think second is probably UFC fans themselves. I think that UFC fans probably hate the UFC more than anybody, and I thought that was a funny comment to make kind of in the scheme of all these cancellations.
Pretty accurate. Imagine being both a boxing and UFC fan. Ugh.
Yeah, it's a problem.
You really hate
UFC. Yeah, you just hate your life at that point. But besides the point, let's just jump right into this UFC 294 recap. Really exciting fight night. And I will kind of agree with you, Chris. In some facets, I felt like the late notice replacements did make this card a bit more exciting. But of course, I mean, I was disappointed not to see Oliveira in the cage. But jumping into one of the earlier fights in this main card was Magomed Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker, ending in a no contest. And there were some shenanigans going on in the ring after this. Dana White had to come in and literally separate the two fighters and tell Johnny that, like, you were going to get cut pretty much if you start a fight in the octagon. So this all spurred from Magomed Ankalaev throwing a knee to Johnny Walker while he was downed. He had a knee on the ground, which is an illegal strike. The referee stopped the fight, and then the doctor came in to kind of assess the situation, see if Walker could continue the fight. Off the back of that, Walker kind of gave a weird answer where he exactly was. I believe he said the desert, which isn't technically wrong, but also not technically accurate. So then the doctor talked to the ref, and then the ref officially waved off the fight and then started the whole shenanigans in the octagon where Ankalaev was trying to fight Walker, and it was a whole fiasco. But just for what I want to ask you guys is, what was your opinion on this fight? Were you liking where it was heading up until it got finished? And just your take on everything that happened in the octagon after the fight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously disappointing ending. I thought, like, if it kept going, we kind of mentioned it last week on the pod, you never know what you're going to get with Johnny Walker, and this is certainly not what we expected at all. But I feel like if the fight had kept going on, it would have been very interesting. It seemed like a good start to the round. So it was disappointing. It's definitely history there with the first TKO by language barrier. So not what you want to see, definitely.
TKO by language barrier. I love that.
Must
that
be a record. Hilarious.
That was really funny. There's no way you came up with that on your own, Andy.
No, I stole that from some comment online.
That's too funny, dude. That's too funny. I agree. I mean, the Johnny Walker thing, I feel like they almost get too intricate with kind of letting these guys continue and letting these guys stop. I think it's, if you know, if the answer is in front of you, you should just take it. You shouldn't be looking kind of for a deeper meaning. I do think Johnny, especially on an illegal strike like that, he shouldn't be, you know, punished for that. And I think if he can continue, I think you give him the benefit of the doubt, especially with how kind of evenly matched it was. Didn't seem like it was necessarily domination either way. I do feel like, obviously, also just from another, like in a marketing and just for the future of his career standpoint, Johnny really needed that. I felt like Johnny really needed not even necessarily a win, but just a strong performance. And for this fight to end in such a charade and just kind of a carnival, it really is detrimental. And it was just really disappointing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, a lot of guys had, or both guys had a ton of stakes heading into this fight, Johnny Walker more so, I think, than Ankalaev. But still, I mean, Ankalaev had a draw in a title fight. That was his most recent, you know, fight coming into this one. So, I mean, a lot of stakes on both sides and guys that want to kind of bounce back. But I think the funniest thing out of this entire, like, whole fiasco that happened was the video of Johnny Walker, like, outside the arena, still in his full fight kit with the gloves on. He didn't even have shoes on, which was crazy. And I love how Dana White was saying, like, oh, yeah, we don't do that. That was some weird one-off thing. We were trying not to, like, throw guys out into the street without their shoes on. But it was so ridiculous.
Classic Dana.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, definitely.
Just summarizes how that fight went. Like, just what happened? I think, remember the group chat, we're like, what just happened? Like, what's going on? What did we just witness? Everyone was just so confused. You heard the commentators too. They're like, even they were like going crazy. It was just such a weird moment for sure.
Oh yeah, no, definitely the weirdest moment of the fight night by far. But yeah, definitely one that I'm not going to forget anytime soon. But moving on to this co-main event, Khamzat Chimaev defeats Kamaru Usman via unanimous decision. This was an interesting fight, guys. It definitely wasn't like, you know, I wouldn't say a huge win for Khamzat. I mean, obviously big name value over Usman, but you got to consider, I mean, he's moving up a weight class, short notice replacement, and also he didn't really go out there and finish him. I mean, he did look dominating and everything like that. I think it was a great performance by him. But definitely not like the barn burner that I was really expecting. It was still very impressive from Khamzat, and I felt like Usman had a really good showing at middleweight for his middleweight debut. But guys, just general takes on this fight. How'd you like it? Do you think that Khamzat was impressive? Usman was lacking. Just what are your general takes?
Yeah, it's interesting because I just want him to fight a normal fight. Like, I just want, like, you know, Usman at middleweight. Like, it's always these bizarre situations that Khamzat finds himself in. And I do think he is just a destroyer. You know, I feel like I'm growing more fond of these Dagestani guys every single day. I just think they just smash people and it's awesome. But I would kind of like to see him just add more legitimacy to his resume. I mean, Kamaru kind of made him look bad. I mean, if Khamzat wanted to, you know, come off well in this, he really needed to smash him. And, you know, especially coming up to a weight he hasn't fought in, it didn't come off well that it was so evenly matched. I just want him to fight in like normal situations for maybe once. That'd be normal. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I get that feeling because, you know, everyone was saying that he was supposed to destroy Usman. I know on the pod, it was like two of us were for Usman, so it didn't feel that way. But for the general public, that was the idea where, like, Usman's going to get wrecked, you know? And that's the idea for every, like, Chimaev fight, really, just because that's the hype around him. But the two big names he's fought recently, Burns and Usman, like, he hasn't looked that impressive. He hasn't looked the unbeatable beast that people play him out to be. He lost round two there to Usman. Round three was still not amazing. You know, he won it, but it's just because of takedown and then you don't really do much. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. And I definitely share the sentiment of like, can we just get him like fighting some regular like fight, some regular competition and actually figure out how good is he? Because they just keep throwing in big names. But at the end of the day, we still have the question, like, how good is he actually? Like, we don't know yet. And that's
yeah. there's a difference between big names and legitimacy. Like the big names and legitimacy are not exclusive, and I feel like that's kind of the problem that Hamza kind of finds himself in. And I just some more legitimacy to that resume, because I do think, like, I don't think any of us think he can't, you know, fight legitimately and, you know, make his way up that division. But I just think he needs to kind of get there. I saw a tweet. It was who would have thought 3 years ago Hamza and Usman will be fighting each other to see who can fight Strickland for the belt. I think that's hilarious. It's just like such a funny kind of situation we find ourselves in right now. And we'll get to it later with the boxing. I think Sean can make that step over into, you know, a similar kind of situation that Ngannou has found himself into. But for right now, where the middleweight division is, I think it's Hamza's for the taking, especially if Izzy is going to kind of take this hiatus that he's been talking about.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think maybe that's the main reason I was disappointed with this fight. And that is that Khamzat still seems just a little illegitimate in my eyes. Because, I mean, his two biggest fights, like you guys were saying, Usman and Burns, against natural welterweights. And both of those fights didn't really seem that convincing. I mean, if you want to go to the stat line, Usman landed 36 significant strikes in this fight. Khamzat only landed 38. And the only area in the fight that really edged him statistically was the takedowns, getting 4 out of 12, which, I mean, it's impressive, but also against a guy that you're, you know, naturally 15 pounds heavier than in terms of fighting at weight classes. It's just a little disappointing for me, but hopefully, you know, he gets, you know, a little bit more hype behind this fight and fight some actual legitimate middleweight contenders here. But I will say I found it funny that Sean Strickland came out after this fight and said he was like, yeah, that is 100% not a fight that deserves a title shot at all. He totally shut that down like immediately. He was like, Khamzat, no.
The golden rule, Drew, the one with the gold rules.
Yeah. And I do also want to clarify, like, we're like saying, oh, we want Jemaev to like have this like big fight and actually like be tested. But at the same time, it's not, at least it doesn't seem like it's mostly his fault. Like, people need to like step up, you know, and fight him too. So like it goes both ways. The fights need to be made. It's not a knock on him. Like, as we said, we know he has great potential and he can be one of those top dogs, but there's levels to this. We want to know just how at the top he would be. And so people need to start fighting him. You know, that's what he needs. He needs competition.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it takes two to tango at the end of the day. And also, I feel like that we should say this. This wasn't his fault that this fight ended up getting scheduled, because this was totally in the corner of Paulo Costa. This was him getting the surgery. Yeah, like, I mean, 100%. Because I feel like in the past, it has been his problem missing weight, leading to the whole Tony Ferguson switch up and everything like that. But this time around, it definitely wasn't his fault. So, you know, props to him, still showing up on fight night, still getting a big win, and over a big name in Usman as well. Yeah. So at the very end of the day, I think it is, you know, still a very, very impressive win. But moving on to this main event, this was a fight I was so, so excited for. I was like, this is the fight that Volk is going to be like, you know, pound for pound number one. He's finally going to be reigning on top. All the naysayers are going to be quiet. And then Islam Makhachev goes out there in the first round, head kick, knockout, finishes him on the ground. Man, this fight, it was crazy for me. I'm not going to lie. Volkanovski just looked a step behind the entire fight. It looked very similar to how the first fight was playing out. It seemed that Makhachev was utilizing the kicks a whole lot more often against Volkanovski, definitely to the body, to the leg. And that's something that I saw a lot of people talk about on what he should do heading into this next fight, is use his range advantage, which I felt like he didn't use too well against Volkanovski in the first fight, was using it this time around, opened up the head kick, and eventually got him the finish. So my question to you guys is, how impressive did Makhachev look to you? And also, do you think that Volkanovski just looked offbeat or, you know, off step in this fight?
Drew, this guy Islam, he's a monster. He's a monster. He's an absolute monster. This lightweight division, they're in trouble. They really are. I feel like he's going to have a stranglehold over this division for a little while. I'll talk about an idea I have in a minute. But I do think like delegitimizing this win because of the short notice on Volkanovski's part. Like, I think Volky was ready for this. I think he was ready to go. And I think discrediting it would be a disservice to how good Islam is. I also feel that, you know, when you look at this fight, I don't think it's Volkanovski necessarily dropping the ball, but it's just Islam being an absolute superstar. And it didn't even look like Volkanovski was even really having an off night or anything of that nature. It really just felt like Islam was just going to smash. I mean, you could even hear it in the post game, presser, where he doesn't even care who he fights next. He just wants to smash people. And it's the kind of guy I can get behind personally. And like I said before, I'm just becoming more and more fond of these Dagestani boys every single day.
Gotcha. You're sounding more and more like Riley Lucas, I will say, yeah. But which is very funny, but I did like that quote a lot. And it reminded me a ton of Khabib saying like, oh, I don't make those decisions. Dana has to make those decisions. I'll fight anybody, just the anywhere, anytime thing. I've always been a big fan of, so I'm glad that Makhachev, you know, shares that same sentiment. But what'd you see in this fight, Andy?
Yeah, it's tough to tell just because the circumstances of Volky like showing up last minute, having to drop all the weight. So there's always that excuse, which he even kept mentioning in the buildup anyways. And I think we kind of teased it also last week, or maybe it was just us discussing outside of the podcast, but everyone's like, yeah, he has like the out already. Like the excuse is set for him losing and like not even like being close. And then that happened first round. Like, you know, it was maybe to be more expected than I anticipated. I thought Volk still had a chance. I thought he would have made it a fight. But I think part of me that wanting that to happen, like wanting a really good and close fight, it's just because of how good Islam is. Because realistically, if I look at the rest of the lightweight, I don't see anyone there beating him. And I know everyone's saying Oliveira would be the, like, he needed his chance to like get his revenge, whatever. I don't see him beating Islam. I'm sorry, but Oliveira's like looked close to being beat by every time he's like defended his title. He's always wobbled, somehow pulls it out of the hat.
Kind of the point, Andy. That's kind of the point, though.
Yeah, but you can't do that against a guy like Islam, though. You can't do it against, yeah, like against Michael Chandler. That makes sense, you know, like, but against a guy like Islam, that's not going to happen.
Stray shot and Michael Chandler.
Yes, my bad. He's just more wild. That's what I meant. But
of course.
But yeah, like Volky was like the only one who finally like showed any signs of like beating Islam, and now that's gone too. So it's a weird spot. I think, Chris, you said it perfectly, where he's gonna have a stranglehold on this division. I really like, I look down those names, I don't see anyone beating him.
I can I rebuttal? Ooh, there's okay. One guy not on that list that I think is the fight to make. Like, I think it's the perfect fight to make right now. Connor's return fits perfectly right here. It does. You know, and you guys are laughing because you have to think about it. I don't like Connor. Like, I think a lot of the fights that people have been trying to like dream make, or, you know, people putting themselves into the shoes of Dana White, they haven't made sense. I feel like this one makes the most sense. The story is there. I mean, it's already written. It wouldn't be hard to sell a billion copies of this pay-per-view. It would be a money making. They'd be printing money like a mint, like literally like a mint. They'd be printing money. You could do it anywhere. You could do it in Ireland. We go to Moscow if we want. I don't know if, you know, world politics might make that an issue, but like it would be wild. That's the fight to make. And especially now that Connor, it seems like Connor's relevancy is kind of waning in the public eye. And it seems like now he almost feels it to be a necessity to come back and fight. And it fits perfectly with this whole narrative that we're even spinning right now, where it's like Islam has this stranglehold on the division and no one's going to do it. You know, you look at the list, nobody's going to be able to do it. And then just that music hits and Notorious hits. And it's just, the story's written. It gives me goosebumps thinking about it right now. And that's what I want to see personally. Maybe 300. I don't know if that's too soon, but it would be awesome.
That's it. It would be a good story. It would definitely sell stylistically.
Connor would get smashed, though.
Yeah, but I'll say, like, stylistically.
Yeah, I think Connor dies in that fight.
Stylistically, Connor's dead in that fight. Yeah. But that's not the fight to make if he wants to win. But if you want to sell pay-per-views, Dana White, that is probably a really good fight to make. There is a story there. That's a really good point. Hey, and USADA gone now? Connor looking buff?
Exactly. Yeah, he's set.
His extracurriculars in the ring as well. He doesn't need to stop him. He doesn't need to drop a cold turkey. He can just continue all the way through.
I will add one other facet to your kind of matchup there, Chris, that I think could be, because I'm thinking, like, I mean, if the UFC were to schedule that, I feel like, you know, cage heads such as myself would be up in arms just in terms of like the legitimacy of the title shot. So I think if maybe McGregor fought Michael Chandler first, maybe gets a big knockout there, that's a very doable fight for him. I think a very winnable fight. If he wins that fight, then calls out Makhachev, I think that actually perfectly sets up that title shot.
And yeah, I can see like lightweight title chance right away does seem a little abrupt for sure.
Yeah, no, I just know people would be like holding riots outside of the UFC Apex if they did that. 100%. That'd be a little crazy. But bring it back to this Makhachev and Volkanovski fight. The one last thing I do want to highlight out of this fight, though, is that I was just interested to see what Volkanovski was saying post-fight on how just like dealing with mental challenges and being outside of fighting, and also like, you know, explaining some of the reasons why he didn't perform as well against this, you know, in this Makhachev rematch, saying like, you know, I didn't really train as much as I thought I should have, also coming off the couch, everything like that. I just found it very intriguing for somebody that is pound for pound number two in the world, on top of the world, one of the biggest stars in the UFC, still just talking about, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that. I just wanted your guys' take very quickly on just kind of some of the things you took away from that post-fight interview with Volk.
Yeah, it definitely was like all the whole depression thing. He just like wants to fight. I think he was like, just give me anyone, that same sentiment too. He just wants to compete. And it makes sense given like his dominance in his division, where like it probably feels like a while since he's been like properly challenged. So yeah, I mean, the mental aspect is definitely going to affect that. It's probably what we saw in that fight too, why he got destroyed that quickly. You know, I think Islam still would have probably won, but to do it that fast was, I'd say, pretty surprising. And people really underestimate how like the mental aspect can affect in sports. So that's what we're seeing there. Not sure if he should keep competing if he has that mentality. You know, he has a mentality of like, just give me anyone, I'll fight. I just want to fight, whatever, because he doesn't know what he is without fighting. But is that really the mentality he wants, like, as a champion, of like, just throw anyone and maybe I'll prepare, maybe not? Like, maybe he does have to go figure that out first. I don't know. It's a weird thing that only he'll know and have to deal with his camp, you know?
Yeah, I feel that's a really good point, Andy, just kind of talking about, you know, his entire identity is in fighting, and that can create a real depression when you don't have it anymore. And it's, you know, your entire identity is kind of taken away from you in, you know, a lot of respects. I also feel like the second half of that kind of mental warfare that he might be going through is, when you kind of think about it, Islam is the unclimbable mountain for him. You know, he tried it the first time, wasn't successful. I think he was pretty confident in this fight that he'd be able to get it done, just from, you know, how he got a feel in that first fight. And to not do it again, I think it can kind of be a similar dynamic to DC when he just couldn't beat Jones. Like, it just, it gets into your head a lot, and it just, it makes you feel kind of inferior, and it really, it's not great. It's not a great mental place to be. And I just hope Volky doesn't fall into that spot. Obviously, the Strickland fight wasn't the second fight. It was the first one. But I think Izzy is maybe in a similar state right now. Maybe they can have a little powwow in Australia. But I really just think it's a hard spot for him to be in right now. And I think a little bit of time would be really important for him.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's kind of in the same class as Adesanya saying, like, I might not fight for a year or two to kind of really recoup myself mentally. But yeah, I think that's definitely just the interesting aspect to highlight, especially considering that he has to move back down the featherweight, and his next, you know, title shot contender is against Ilya Topuria, who is a scary, scary dude. So you got to be firing on all cylinders mentally, physically, to take that guy on. So I just thought that was important to highlight. But that was the UFC 294 card. It was very, very fun to watch. We got UFC 295 coming up next, which is at MSG. We got some big changes to that card, which we will talk about in a moment. But first, I want to talk about actually a big boxing event happening only a day away, and that is Francis Ngannou taking on Tyson Fury in Saudi Arabia. Guys, this should be a very, very exciting, fun fight. It's a real power matchup versus that, or I would say power versus technique type matchup. And guys, I just want your take on who wins and how. Personally, I think that, or maybe I should frame it more so as, does Ngannou, do you think he actually has a chance in this fight? Personally, I think that he definitely does, and I'll explain why in a little bit. But first, I want your guys' takes. Do you think that Ngannou does have a chance in this fight and can bring the fight to Tyson Fury?
Yeah, there's two polar opposite ways you can kind of frame this matchup. You could frame it the most powerful punch in the world, really kind of stepping into a domain he hasn't been in before and, you know, can catch someone by surprise. You could also frame it, you know, guy who's never boxed before, boxing the greatest boxer of all time. Like, that's another way to phrase it. I think the latter is probably a little more realistic to the situation. On paper, it's exciting. In the pressers, the face-to-faces, the stare-downs, it's all very cool. But I just, like, Tyson's going to roll him over. And if he doesn't, he's seriously in danger if he doesn't, too. Because, you know, I hate the whole narrative, the whole one punch could change everything. The guy fought Deontay Wilder and beat him. What was it, three? Did he beat him three times? I mean, he tied him once and then beat him twice. I don't see Deontay Wilder being an inferior boxer to Francis Ngannou. Like, I feel like Deontay's definitely more of a challenge. And especially toward the latter end of that trilogy, the way that Tyson made Deontay look, like, he might make Francis look really bad in this fight, especially with announcing his next fight already. I mean, that's a level of disrespect I don't think I've ever seen. It's just Tyson's going to roll him over, and I don't even think it will be close. And if it does happen and Francis beats him, I think there's no, I don't think there's any comparison. I think it's easily the biggest upset in combat sport history. I don't think there's any debate.
Yeah, if that does happen, that would be insane. Just ridiculous. Yeah. Because yeah, he's the hardest hitter in the world, but like, does power really matter if like the other guys mastered the art of punch without getting punched back? You know, like, that's the thing. And the only way he wins this is realistically if Tyson Fury doesn't really try, which, like, you know, him announcing his next fight already, call it confidence, call it whatever you want. But if it is because maybe he's just like, I'm not even going to train for this, you know, because it's like, there's no way this guy's going to beat me. Then maybe like Ngannou has a slight chance, but even still, it would be really low. Like, even if Tyson Fury trained 0 minutes coming into this fight for like a whole year or two, it would be really, really tough. The muscle memory is going to kick in, and like, it's just a really tough fight. Cash grab, it's going to work out. But hey, at least the pressers were kind of wholesome, you know, with Tyson. I don't know if you guys saw Tyson Fury be like, you're fat, whatever. He's fat, come on. And then like Ngannou's like, well, you were fat and you were like knocking people out, and they just laugh it off. Like, at least it's not like they're not forcing the build up. That's the only good takeaway I've taken from this.
Yeah, I want to say one thing really quick, Drew. It's interesting because I think he could kind of downplay him, as Andy's saying, but also in some respect, if you just turn on any Ngannou knockout ever, I feel like that would instill a level of fear in you that you would have to prepare. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's too much of a margin for error where you could really get in trouble. And he's genuinely scary when he knocks people out. It looks like UFC 5. Like, he makes people turn into liquid. It's gross. And just one more thing. I just want to say this is a gripe. I keep watching the press conferences because Andy just reminded me of it. I don't know if there's a guy in combat sports I hate more than Tyson Fury's father.
Like, oh my gosh. I
despise that guy. Thank you, Andy.
Wow, really? Okay.
He is the worst. Like, just dude, just like, what do you like? If you want fame so bad, like, you're literally fiending for fame. Like, get your life in order, figure it out. Like, even in the Tommy buildup with KSI, like, I'm just so sick of it now. It's back-to-back fights where this guy seems like he's like the third most important part of the fight, and he's not, like, at all. Like, just go somewhere and just be alone. Like, I hate him so much. I'm sorry. I had to rant on that because he's the worst. I hate him so much. Andy, yeah. I want to hear why that you had that kind of reaction.
I'd love I saw the buildup with the KSI fight and Tommy, and like, Tommy wasn't even really like, it didn't seem like Tommy was the one fighting KSI. It seemed like his dad was the one fighting, doing all the trash talk. So like, he just needs to shut up and like move out of the way and let the fighters fight. You know, it's not his thing to promote.
He got in the way of the face. They were doing a face-to-face and they were trying to get a shot of it on the camera, and he's in the way. You can't see them. It's like, dude, have like 1% of self-awareness, please.
Yeah, no, I've never been a John Fury fan as well. So I guess that is something that we can all agree on here. But yeah, I guess bringing it back to this fight, at least for my personal take, is that I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. I think that it's definitely interesting that Tyson Fury already has a fight scheduled next after this fight. In my opinion, I think it's definitely a little bit cocky. And I think that he definitely hasn't been thinking about this fight in necessarily like the highest regard. I think that maybe he's thinking more so as an afterthought, like just a big paycheck. But I think off the back of that, though, we have seen Tyson Fury mess around in the ring a couple times, and we've seen it bite him in the butt, you know, really, really bad. And we've also seen him, you know, come back from some really, really bad areas. But I think that if you play around with Francis Ngannou, he's not going to give you any room whatsoever to, you know, really recover. And I'm not saying that Deontay Wilder doesn't have that one hit knockout power, or he's a lesser puncher than Francis Ngannou. I just think that Francis Ngannou is really viewing this fight as like his big debut in boxing, and like his one chance to like really legitimize himself as like kind of a standalone combat sports product that doesn't need to, you know, be tied to the UFC or PFL. So I think that he thinks of this as like his Super Bowl, essentially. So I think off the back of that, I think he's going to make it a very, very interesting fight. I don't think he's necessarily going to win, but I think he's going to take the fight to Fury. I think he's going to make it very, very competitive. So maybe that's just a bit of a counterpoint. I don't know if you guys agree whatsoever. I think that maybe it could lead to a knockout. We'll see.
You were one of those guys, Drew, that was predicting Connor to beat Floyd, weren't you?
No.
I sound right now.
I know. That's why I'm really trying not to sound like. Honestly, I know. I feel like, it's so bad. Like comparing like Tyson Fury, one of the greatest boxers of all time, to Francis Ngannou, who is notable for just bum rushing guys in the octagon and just hoping that it kind of works out. It's crazy that I'm even making this comparison. But I will say though, like just kind of the things I've been seeing in the build-up to this fight, you know, like going to train with Mike Tyson and, you know, going to train with Teddy Atlas and other guys, it seems like he is trying to take this as seriously as possible. So I think that's at least what makes it interesting for me. I think Tyson Fury still wins, though. So at the end of the day,
If Ngannou wins, it has to be knockout first few rounds, because the other thing is, at least in the UFC, it seemed like he gassed out pretty quickly. And in boxing, he's going to gas out so fast.
Imagine him in the 12th round, Andy. Can you imagine him fighting in the 12th round?
I think he'd be like half, like trying to, I don't know, like just stumbling around. Like they wouldn't even have to punch him, just like blow at him, you know, like, just fall.
Fall over.
Yeah, like he really has to get it done before. If it goes like the distance, it's just going to be so embarrassing. Like I'd honestly prefer if Fury knocks him out before Ngannou like gasses out that bad, because it would just be such a bad look, like so bad.
I will say this might be a hot take for me. I think that this fight will end and finish one way or another. I think that Ngannou, like you guys were saying, I don't think he really has the gas tank to last all 12 rounds, especially through a grueling boxing fight that Tyson Fury pretty much always makes for his opponents. And also if Ngannou happens to land one lucky punch and, you know, start a sprint, I think obviously that's going to be a finish the other way. So I think at the end of the day, we will see a finish, but
just one quick 20-second point. I do feel like the threat of Francis increases a lot when he's allowed to fight a guy when he's down. Like after he knocks a guy down, he can continue to, you know, those hammer fists are just so devastating. Like if Tyson's going to have time to get up and recalibrate, things like that, I just can't see Ngannou doing it. But again, I'm rooting for it because it would be the biggest upset in combat sport history, bar none.
Yeah, no, very, very true. I mean, who knows? Maybe next week we're talking about that. That could be crazy. That could be crazy. But moving on, though, we do have a little bit of disappointing UFC news before we wrap up this episode of Pound for Pound. And that is John Jones is officially out of UFC 295 due to a pectoral injury. The video was posted and shown by Dana White. It was while he was wrestling, just kind of he zigged, I zagged type thing. And then his, John Jones' shoulder just ended up kind of moving in a weird way, snapped off the pectoral muscle. So now the Alex Pereira versus Jiri Prochazka light heavyweight title fight is moved up to the new main event. And now the new co-main event is Sergey Pavlovich versus Tom Aspinall for the interim heavyweight belt. And honestly, guys, I mean, I'm so, so disappointed that John Jones isn't going to be fighting at MSG. I felt like it was going to be such a cool thing fighting him or watching him fight in New York, literally for one of the first times ever in the UFC. Going to be so exciting, especially going up against Stipe Miocic, one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. But in its place, I think we have a really, really exciting matchup. So I just want your general takes. Are you disappointed? Are you happy with the rescheduling? Just general takes, guys.
Yeah, no, I First of all, I just want to say it's really cool that Alex is getting his second MSG main event of his career. Like, that's really impressive. And he's a guy you like to root for. Even though I am an Izzy guy, I like Alex as well. And I think they honestly like each other at this point after all their fighting. But yeah, the John fight, honestly, like, I'm not as disappointed as I could be. I said it before we got on the air. No one hates the UFC more than UFC fans just because of all these replacements and just all this disappointment that they've had to feel. But I wasn't a huge fan of this Stipe fight because I just felt like it was going to be the GOAT just beating the crap out of an old white guy for, you know, 3 minutes or whatever. And it was going to be kind of gross. I do think this opens up I think the possibility of the Francis fight increases now because he can come back from the injury. And then that will kind of be what's on the table is the Francis fight, wherever they want to do that. Still think ESPN should simulcast that UFC with the PFL, but I digress. But I do think that, you know, this fight, it was really supposed to be a landmark moment. It was supposed to be the cherry on top for John. And it's just, it's so in the character of his career that it just wouldn't end up happening.
Yeah. I want to keep this brief. I have two main points. One, now that John's out, just lower the prices, please. I want to go to a UFC event. Let me go to MSG.
That's cool. Yeah.
I need to afford
it. Good point.
Yeah, bring the prices down for me now. Like, you don't have no excuse. Number two, I was not as disappointed seeing John Jones pulling out as I was that Stipe's didn't get like rescheduled. Like, Stipe's fully out too.
Yeah.
Because I want at least, like, I don't know. I feel like Stipe's probably definitely at the end of his career. So for his last fight to be like the knockout to Ngannou after everything he did for the weight class, I just feel like he needs a send off, you know, he needs a proper event where maybe he doesn't get knocked out like that bad. So I don't know if we're going to get that send off now. He's so old. Like, who's going to fight? It sucks as a Stipe fan. I think he deserved better, and he deserved a good ending to his career.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens. Maybe the fight will be rescheduled. But yeah, Stipe definitely deserved a big send off, you know, considering he is currently the heavyweight GOAT, more so than John Jones, in my opinion. But with that in mind, I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to watch Ngannou versus Fury this weekend and our recap episode next week, breaking down all the results and possibly an upset. Who knows? Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my fantastic co-hosts, Chris Carino and Andy Rodriguez. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.